Please come with me to our reading, Psalm 32. It's a psalm of David, and David opens with these words. Verse 1, blessed is he. Verse 2, blessed is the man. Blessed. The word could be translated happy. So says David, happy is he, happy is the man. So David's talking about happiness. Now I'm told that psychologists say it's now possible to measure happiness. There's a happiness index. And you can take a 1-minute test, you can do it on the web, and find out just how happy you are. And you're given 5 statements, and you have to score between 1 and 7 whether you agree or disagree with the statement. And from your answers, they can calculate your happiness score. So how happy are you? 5 statements. Number 1, in most ways, my life is ideal. Do you agree or disagree? Number 2, the conditions of my life are excellent. Number 3, I am satisfied with my life. They're all sort of the same sort of questions, aren't they, really? Number 4, so far I have gotten the important things I want in life. Agree? Disagree? And number 5, if I could live my life over, I would change almost nothing. Do you agree or disagree? Well, it's a happiness test. How would David score? Oh, probably very well. He's a strong, charismatic leader. He's a handsome warrior king. He's adored by his people. He's respected by everyone. And he lives a life of plenty and pleasure. But, says David, that is not where true happiness is found. Verse 1, happy is he. Verse 2, happy is the man. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, young people, I wonder if you're interested in reading on. Because David goes on to tell us the only true and sure way to be happy. It goes on to tell us where true happiness is to be found. Are you interested? Well, let's read on. Verse 1. Happy is he whose transgression is forgiven, whose sin is covered. Blessed or happy is the man to whom the Lord does not impute iniquity. So says David, true happiness is found in being forgiven by God. And David should know. One evening after a later day in bed, David takes a stroll on the palace roof from where he sees a beautiful woman bathing. And he stops. And he looks. And he watches. You can read the account in 2 Samuel chapter 11. And there the action is quick and stark and unadorned. He sees her, he sends for her, he takes her, he has sex with her, and then she goes home. There's no love, no affection, no tenderness. We don't read of any words, because there's no relationship. It's just lust. And it's adultery, because the woman is married to a brave, decent man by the name of Uriah, who's away at the front fighting with the army. And, of course, the woman is now pregnant with David's child. And so to cover his tracks, David has her husband, he arranges for her husband, to be murdered. The woman mourns, marries David, the birth of the child is legitimized, and David's guilty secret is safe. Or is it? There are 2 witnesses. There are always 2 witnesses, David's conscience and the living God, and neither remain silent. And yet, as we shall see, this man, guilty of murder, guilty of adultery, discovers a happiness that sometimes, verse 11, makes him want to shout with joy. David writes this psalm as a great sinner, but a sinner who God has pardoned. So please have that psalm open in front of you. And as we look at it together, we have 3 things to say, 3 points. So point number 1, true happiness. Verse 1, blessed or happy is he whose transgression is forgiven, whose sin is covered. Blessed or happy is the man to whom the Lord does not impute iniquity. Now there are three words there which sum up David and which characterize your life and mine. What are they? Verse 1, transgression. Verse 1, sin. Verse 2, iniquity. What's transgression? Well, here's a straight road. God has erected a sign next to it. This is the way, walk in it. But what do? Do I take God's road? No chance. First of all, who is God to tell me what to do? And anyway, as far as I'm concerned, God's road leads to nowhere. I'm going my way. My friend, you're guilty of walking out on God. In the language of the Bible, you're guilty of transgression. What's more, verse 1, we're characterized by sin. Now, what's sin? Well, the word here in the original, the Hebrew, is quite specific. A Roman emperor was watching an archer fire 20 arrows in quick succession. And you know what it's like when nobody's watching? You're brilliant, but as soon as someone turns up, especially an emperor, and watches you, you go to pieces. And this poor archer firing 20 arrows in quick succession, every single one of them missed the target. What did the emperor say? May I compliment you on missing the mark. And that's sin. It's missing the mark. The Bible says all have sinned and fall short. They missed the mark, fall short of the glory of God. Is there anything wrong with the target? No, that's clear enough. To love God with all my heart and soul and mind and strength, and to love my neighbour as myself. But we've missed the mark. I've never been on target. There's a spiritual grand canyon between what God commands and how I live. I sin. And what's more, verse 2, we're characterized by iniquity. Now you kids know all about iniquity. The Hebrew word means to bend or to bend double or to twist. So you kids, you know all about it, don't you? When you do wrong, and the grown-up says, what have you been doing? What happens? Do you give them a straight answer? No, you try to wriggle out of it, don't you? That's iniquity. And if we do it with one another, we do it with God. Can God ever get a straight answer from you? Iniquity. And iniquities are like a 10-lane motorway between God and me. It's impossible to cross. The Bible says your iniquities have separated you from your God. So what is David characterized by? What am I characterized by? Says David, three words. Transgression, sin, iniquity. But, says David, verse 1, some people have had their transgressions forgiven. The sense of it is, their transgressions lifted from their shoulders. Has the weight of your guilt been lifted from your shoulders? Or do you carry it around with you? And some people, says David, verse 1, have had their sins covered. The sense of it is they've not just been, sort of, as it were, tucked under the carpet, but they've disappeared for good. Well, my sins were here, but they're gone. I can't find them. No one else can find them. God says no one ever will find them. They've been covered. Do you know that? Or do you still walk around with a personal history? Those things of which you are ashamed. And some people, verse 2, though guilty of iniquity, have had the charges dropped. God says you're free to go. Do you know that? Or are you still waiting, as it were, for the knock at the door? For God to call you to account? So all of us are characterized by transgression, sin, iniquity. But there are some, not all, some who have had their transgressions forgiven, their sin covered, their iniquities no longer imputed to them. And David the adulterer, David the murderer, he is among them. And it's those people, says David, and I include myself among them, it's those people, says David, who have found true and lasting happiness. Happy is he whose transgression is forgiven. Happy is the man to whom the Lord does not impute iniquity. And that word happy is a plural word. He's saying happy, happy, happy is the man who's had his transgression forgiven. It's like a great big bundle of happinesses which have been all wrapped up together and thrown onto you. True happiness is found in being right with God, having my sins dealt with. And you see, those who found true happiness, they no longer need to live in denial. Look at verse 2 again. Blessed is the man to whom the Lord does not impute iniquity, and in whose spirit there is no deceit. I'm no longer living in denial. If I've been forgiven, I'm someone who's owned up to what I've done, to what I am. I've given God a straight answer. And that straight answer, far from making things worse, I've actually found true happiness, heaven's happiness, God's forgiveness. Do you know that? Have you found that? Or are you still listening, living in denial? And even as we're preaching, you haven't got your fingers in your ears, but you might as well have. You're saying, not listening. Not listening. Living in denial. Well, point number two. The way to true happiness. We've touched on it already, but let David lead the way. Now, for 9 months, the time it takes for a baby to grow in the womb, before birth, for 9 months, David was in denial. He describes his experience in three ways. Verse 3, when I kept silent, my bones grew old through my groaning all day long. Old arthritic bones, where you can't move without the pain, without the groaning. So as the awfulness of what David has done begins to dawn upon him, as it begins to register, David is in agony, spiritual arthritis. And there's no narcotic in the world to dull the pain. Verse 4, for day and night your hand was heavy upon me. We went walking in the Brecon Beacons many years ago when we were young and we fancied ourselves. And so we had huge packs on our backs and we had a ridiculously ambitious route. But as the day wore on, the sun came up and it began to blaze upon us. And if you've ever been walking in the Brecons, I don't know, it's just one grassy slope after. You get to the top of one, there's another one there, and just one grassy slope after another, unending it seemed. The packs we were carrying, they got heavier and heavier and heavier until I was bowed under its weight. I would have given anything to lay that burden down or to get someone else to carry it. But I couldn't because the rendezvous point was still miles away. Says David, I'm exhausted carrying this guilt. If only someone would take it from me. If only I could put the burden down. Verse 4, my vitality was turned into the drought of summer. Think of a cancer patient. Each time you look at them, they've lost weight. And they're getting weaker and weaker. And you feel the very life is being sucked out of them. And David, with the fire of his conscience burning in his bones, is a man drained of life. Now, my friend, do you know what David is saying? Are we tonight talking the same language? John Bunyan, in his classic, The Holy War, he writes about the city of Mansoul. And man's soul is conquered by Diabolus and his evil foes. It's an allegory. It's a story, but every image, every picture in it has a spiritual meaning. It's an allegory of man's alienation from God. That we live lives which are characterized by transgression, sin, iniquity. And yet for all our walking out on God, there's one voice which we cannot silence. David couldn't silence it. Do you know what it is? Bunyan speaks of an inhabitant of Mansoul by the name of Mr. Recorder. Why is that his name? Because he keeps a record of all that has been done. And his voice can be heard throughout Mansoul. And it's the voice of conscience. There's not an inhabitant in the city who cannot hear his voice. Indeed, at times Mr. Recorder thunders and threatens and terrifies the peoples of Mansoul. And though they hate him, they can't shut him up. And they have to listen. And as Bunyan says, every outcry of Mr. Recorder against the sin of Mansoul was the voice of God in him to them. And David has to listen to that voice too. It's the voice of conscience. You have taken another man's wife. Didn't you have a wife of your own? And to cover your guilty secret, you've had a good man, a decent man, a righteous man. You've had him murdered. And now you're pretending you've done nothing wrong. David, I know. David, I've seen. It's known. It's been seen. It's the voice of conscience. But really, it's the voice of God. For day and night, your hand was heavy upon me. David, I know. David, I saw you. And it's eating David up. My friend, Mr. Recorder. You can lock him in a high tower. You can ignore him. You can debauch him as much as you like. But there are some days when you will hear his voice. And some days his voice will thunder. Have you been like David, inwardly groaning? Yeah, and the drugs don't work, do they? Whatever it is you take, you still come back to reality sometime. And are you exhausted under the burden of your guilt? You feel the weight, it goes everywhere with you. You know, you wake up one bright one morning and then suddenly, oh, I remember again. Is the life being sucked out of you? For day and night your hand was heavy upon me. Is God's hand heavy upon you? And maybe you're putting it down to things like stress. I've been working really hard. Or maybe you're lonely. Or maybe you say, oh, I've got troubles in the family, troubles in the home, troubles at work, troubles at school, got relationship troubles, it's my social life. Maybe you're saying, well, actually it's coming here that's causing the problem. But in reality, God is speaking to you through your conscience. When I kept silent, my bones grew old through my groaning all day long. For day and night, your hand was heavy upon me. My vitality was turned into the drought of summer. Franz Joseph Haydn was a wonderful composer, a musical genius. But he had a rotten wife. Do you know what she used to do? She used to take his music manuscripts, she used to cut them up, she used to roll them up, and then use them as hair curlers. It's a shocker, isn't it? Why did she do it? Was it she didn't like his music? It's because she had contempt for him. My friend, why do you break God's commands? Is it because you don't like them? Well, that's part of it. But it's much more than that. It runs much deeper than that. The reason you break God's commands is that you have contempt for God. Maybe you think you can do what you like and get away with it. And that is why God has set within your soul Mr. Recorder, the voice of your conscience. Oh, you'd love to get away with it, but God says you don't. And some days his voice is a nagging voice. Some days, you know it, his voice thunders. And some days, and that's a blessed relief, so you think you can't hear it at all. But it's there, keeping a record. And through it, God is saying, I know all about you. You were seen. You didn't get away with it. I know. I've seen you. Well, this point is called the way to happiness. So how does David escape into the happiness of sins forgiven? Well, you can read about it. God outs David's secrets with the prophet Nathan. David now knows it's out in the open. He can no longer live in denial. And so he does what he should have done a long, long time ago. Verse 3, when I kept silent, my bones grew old. Well, it's time to speak. Verse 5, I acknowledge my sin to you, and my iniquity I have not hidden. I said, I will confess my transgressions to the Lord. You see what David does? David comes clean. He was silent, he's silent no longer. He comes to God. He confesses it all. He tells God what he's done. And what does he discover? Verse 5, and you forgave the iniquity of my sin. The karma of sins forgiven. Have you done that? Don't learn to live with your conscience. Listen to it. It's God speaking to you. And if you listen to it, it will only drive you in one direction. It says, come to God. No more excuses. No special pleading. No looking for loopholes to try and get out of this. Simply come clean. When I kept silent, my bones grew old. Well, it's time, therefore, to start talking, isn't it? Maybe it's time for once in your life to give to God a straight answer. I acknowledge my sin to you. Have you ever said that? My iniquity I have not hidden. Here it is, Lord. It's out in the open. That's what I did. I said, I will confess my transgressions to the Lord. Have you done that? No euphemisms. Name your sin in the presence of God for what it is. Tell him. Because, as David, it's the only way to the happiness of sins forgiven. Now, why should God forgive you? Why? For the same reason he forgave David. And maybe you know the story oh so well. It's the old, old story of Jesus and his love. Jesus, God's Son. What did he do? He went to a cross. And if David's transgressions were lifted from his shoulders, it was because they were put on Jesus' shoulders. And if David's sin was covered, it was because Jesus bore the penalty in David's place. And if David's iniquity wasn't imputed to him, it was because it was imputed to another, Jesus Christ, God's Son. So that when God's justice came to punish the guilty, it was Jesus who took the blame. The charges weren't really dropped, were they? It was just that another suffered in David's place. And because Jesus has suffered for sins, David, this great sinner, he can say, oh, blessed is he who's had his transgression forgiven. So my friend, if you want to find the way to happiness, then you must come to Jesus Christ. You must. When I kept silent, my bones grew old. Well, start to speak. Come to God. Time to what? Verse 5, acknowledge my sin. Time to, well, give God a straight answer. I'm not going to hide my iniquity anymore. I'm not going to pretend it didn't happen. I'm going to say, it was me, I was the man, I'm the sinner. The one you're looking for is me, I'm the guilty one. And I will confess my transgression to the Lord. Lord, I'm confessing it. I'm telling you, this is what happened. Line by line, verse by verse, word by word, situation by situation. I'm going to tell you the whole lot. But as I tell you, Lord, you've told me in this book that Jesus died, the punishing death that sinners died, so that every sinner who comes to you can be forgiven. So, Lord, as I confess my sin, oh God, be merciful to me, a sinner. Have you done that? Will you do that? Our closing point, number three. We'll call it living the happy life. Now, my friend, on the other side of that door, marked forgiveness, you'll find three things. David found them. What are they? Number one, you'll find safety. Verse 6, for this cause everyone who is godly shall pray to you in a time when you may be found. Surely in a flood of great waters they shall not come near him. You are my hiding place. You shall preserve me from trouble. You shall surround me with songs of deliverance. Verse 6 says, David, surely in a flood of great waters they shall not come near him. A flood of great waters. What comes to mind? The flood in Noah's day is what must be in David's mind. In that day when God justly destroyed a guilty world. A flood of great waters. It's a picture of God's anger, isn't it? God's judgment. Well, says David, at the judgment to come, in the flood of great waters, I shall be safe. Surely in the flood of great waters they shall not come near him. I remember seeing television footage of floods in Mozambique. And there was a woman with her child. And there they were clinging to a treetop as the floodwaters, they were just surging, rising around them. And as we watched, a helicopter came along and plucked this woman and her child to safety. My friend, that's forgiveness. It's to be plucked to safety, to be carried high above the floodwaters of God's judgment. Verse 7, you are my hiding place. During the American Civil War, a soldier by the name of Jehoiada Brewer was killed. And when a man gets killed, they go through his clothes to find out what he's got and who he is. And they went through and they found out a little pocketbook. And inside there was a poem. Quite a long poem. It had 9 verses. But it was his story, his testimony. The testimony of a happy man. And the last few verses say this. Shall storms of sevenfold thunder roll and shake the globe from pole to pole? No flaming bolt can daunt my face, for Jesus is my hiding place. On him almighty vengeance fell, that would have sunk a world to hell. He bore it for a chosen race, and thus became their hiding place. A few more rolling suns at most will land me on fair Canaan's coast, when I shall sing this song of grace and see my glorious hiding place. He died a forgiven man. He died a happy man. Safe in Jesus. You are my hiding place. Safe from the judgment to come. You shall preserve me from trouble. Verse 7, you shall surround me with songs of deliverance. And when I read that, I can't help but think of the our Sri Lankan friends. When they're converted, when they come to Christ, when they know the forgiveness of sins, they're baptized. They're baptized in the sea, and they go down under the water, and they come out. And as they come out, what do they come out to the sound of? It's the sound of singing. And as they walk out of the sea and up the beach, they're surrounded by their friends. And their friends are clapping their hands, singing what? Songs of deliverance. That here was our brother, here was our sister, under the judgment of God, unforgiven, but they've come to Jesus Christ, they've found in him a hiding place. And now they're forgiven. Now they've been delivered. Songs of deliverance. Oh, happy day when Jesus washed my sins away. Safety. Do you know anything about that? Or are we talking a foreign language? And you're still clinging to the top of that tree. And you're hoping that the floodwaters won't find you. Go through that door, what else will you find? You'll find fellowship. God himself now speaks, verse 8. I will instruct you and teach you in the way you should go. I will guide you with my eye. Do not be like the horse or like the mule, which have no understanding, which must be harnessed with bit and bridle, else they will not come near you. You see, when God forgives, when God gives you a new record in heaven, you're forgiven, what does he do? He gives you a new heart on earth. No longer a stubborn mule who won't come near, or a headstrong horse that's bucking and kicking and determined to go its own way. When God forgives, he makes you his child. I love the words of verse 8. I will instruct you and teach you in the way you should go. I will guide you with my eye. You all know what it means to be guided with someone's eye. A mother can look at a child and just with her eye, she can reassure that child. She's guiding with her eye. Well, sometimes it's a dad, isn't it? And the child's going to do something he shouldn't do, and the dad looks, and the hand comes back again, and they stop doing the wrong. Just guided with an eye. Those who God forgives, they become his children. So intimate and tender and gentle and real and wonderful is the relationship that he guides them with his eye. And they live to please him, they love him, they adore him. Do not be like the horse or like the mule, which have no understanding, which must be harnessed with bit and bridle, else they will not come near you. My friend, I don't know, maybe you think you're being very clever, backing off from this gospel. You know, every time the gospel comes to you, you back off. And you think you're clever. You're keeping one up, you're keeping a step ahead. But God says, all I see is a stupid mule. And one day I'll have to drag you to judgment. And maybe, my friend, you feel like you're free to do your own thing. And you're clever. And you're smart. And you won't be taken in by these things. And God says, when I look at you, all I see is a proud horse with no more sense than a beast. Don't be like the horse or like the mule, which what? Have no understanding. Are you living as though you have no understanding of these things? Living like a beast. And number three, if you walk through that door marked forgiveness, what else will you find? You will find joy. Look at verse 10. Many sorrows shall be to the wicked, but he who trusts in the Lord, mercy shall surround him. Be glad in the Lord and rejoice, you righteous, and shout for joy, all you upright in heart. What do you shout about? Yeah, maybe it's football. Maybe it's your past your driving test, or I don't know. We all shout about something. I mean, really shout about it. Those who find God's forgiveness, they sing, they dance, and you know, they shout for joy. They've never had joy like it before. Sometimes their joy is such, the New Testament says, well, they have no words for it. They may shout for it sometimes, but sometimes it's joy that you just can't express. Because I can't quite believe it's true that God should forgive me after the person that I am and after what I have done. And it's joy in the Lord who has loved me and saved me and forgiven me, and all at cost to himself. Be glad in the Lord and rejoice, you righteous, and shout for joy, all you upright in heart. If you haven't been forgiven, you've never shouted like that, have you? Shout it for your football team, shout it when you pass your exams, shout it, I don't know, for some reason, but you've never known that. It's a whole world you've never seen, you've never known. It's never even entered into your head. You've never shouted for joy of the sins forgiven. You know nothing of it. Maybe you can't make sense of it. Who can make sense of Alan Gardner's dying words? It's September 1851. He's gone to the tip of South America to preach the gospel, to tell people this good news of God's forgiveness. But after a series of mishaps, he and his small party, they found themselves marooned on a small island. I remember, it's 1851. They don't have radios and all the other things. Battered by Atlantic gales, weakened by cold and disease, they're now without food and water, and there's no prospect of rescue. And they're dying slowly. And what does he write in his diary on the 5th of September? He says, "Great and marvelous are the loving kindnesses of my gracious God. Yes, he who trusts in the Lord, mercy, loving kindnesses shall surround him." And then the next day is his final entry. Now the writing is faint. It's hard to decipher. In his weakness, it's all a bit disjointed. But what are his final words that he leaves on this earth? "Marvelous kindness to me, a sinner. Happy is he whose transgression is forgiven." He's a dying man, but he's a forgiven man. He's a happy man. "Marvelous kindness to me, a sinner." My friend, as we close, what of you? Did you see what it said in verse 10? "Many sorrows shall be to the wicked." If you die unforgiven, says God's word, there is no remedy. God will punish you for your sins. We've spoken of true happiness, haven't we? But for the unforgiven, there is only sorrow. "Many sorrows shall be to the wicked." Jesus spoke of hell as a place of weeping. He said there will be wailing and gnashing of teeth. How often have you cried? I mean, really cried. When you've wailed because your heart was broken, because of a burning wound within, because you were unhappy beyond words, because there was no one to comfort. If you die unforgiven, without coming to Jesus, you will go to the place of weeping. And you will wail, and you will weep. You'll weep over your guilt, over your shame, over the punishment that you cannot bear, your grief. Maybe you'll weep over your lost opportunity on the 2nd of March, 2008, when the gospel was preached to you and the kingdom of God was near. And you said, "No, I'm not coming." And you will weep more tears that have been shed since the beginning of the world. And there will be nobody to comfort you. Can you not see that? Can you not see that? "Many sorrows shall be to the wicked." If you're unforgiven, it's talking about you. It's addressed to you. God has said, "I'm speaking to you." So what can we say? The language of the gospel is please, isn't it? "For this cause, everyone who is godly shall pray to you in a time when you may be found." Tonight is a time when God may be found. When you may come to the place of forgiveness. When you may come to the cross. When you may come to Jesus Christ. It's the only place where burdens are lifted, where sin is dealt with. Will you not come? will you not confess? Will you not fall upon the kind arms of Jesus? Let's sing a hymn.